This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 26th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 380. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, the day he became the 47th president, Donald Trump said Canada and Mexico can expect tariffs on February 1st. What will it mean for British Columbia, a major exporter of lumber, minerals, oil, and gas to the U.S.? My guest is Barry Penner, chair of the Energy Futures Institute, former president of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region and former BC Liberal cabinet minister. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. On January 23rd, 3 days after his return to the White House, President Donald Trump appeared by video to the World Economic Forum's 2025 Davos conference. This is his vision of the U.S. trade relationship with its closest neighbor and ally, Canada.
One thing we're going to be demanding is we're going to be demanding respect from other nations. Canada, we have a tremendous deficit with Canada. We're not going to have that anymore. We can't do it. I don't know if it's good for them. As you probably know, I say you can always become a state. And if you're a state, we won't have a deficit. We won't have to tariff you, et cetera, et cetera. But Canada has been very tough to deal with over the years. And it's not fair that we should have a $200 billion or $250 billion deficit. We don't need them to make our cars, and they make a lot of them. We don't need their lumber because we have our own forests, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need their oil and gas. We have more than anybody.
Donald Trump became the 47th president of the United States on January 20th, and for a few hours, it looked like Canada would dodge the tariffs that he was threatening. But later in the day, in the Oval Office, he told reporters they were coming February 1st. That has left a lot of Canadians very concerned. And one of those Canadians who's concerned is my guest this week on the podcast, Barry Penner. He's the chair of the Energy Futures Institute, which is a project of ResourceWorks, a former four-term BC Liberal MLA. And while he was in government, he was Minister of Environment, Minister of Aboriginal Relations, and Attorney General. Also was president of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region in 2002 and 2003, and is still involved in PENWR as a member of the Finance and Audit Committee. Barry, thank you for joining me on the podcast. I want to start here that you were the head of PENWR, a cross-border organization, at a time when the United States was still recovering from the September 11th terrorist attacks. Canada helped the U.S. in so many ways, like other close allies. But fast forward to 2025, and we're now on the cusp of a trade war. What are your thoughts looking back then and looking now?
It's amazing how the political dynamic can change, and things that were upside, you know, the right side up can become right side down. The notion that the United States would be deliberately trying to cut itself off from the rest of the world, and in particular its closest allies, is something I don't think we could ever have imagined after 2001. And, you know, we were concerned about the extra security at the border. You will maybe remember long lineups of cargo trucks, commercial vehicles trying to get southbound, backing up sometimes for more than a kilometer at our border crossings in the lower mainland in British Columbia. And just adding cost and expense and frustration all the way around, interrupting that very vital two-way trade flow. So our message at that time, and I don't think I'm the one that dreamed it up, but it was one that I used a lot in my meetings with U.S. legislators, was don't let Osama bin Laden and the terrorists succeed beyond their wildest dreams by permanently disrupting our trade relationship and our personal relationship between Canada and the U.S. That is an outcome that Osama bin Laden would have been just absolutely delighted to see, that long time thickening of the border costing billions of dollars in lost productivity and causing hard feelings between the world's closest trading partners and strategic partners. So that message seemed to really resonate and landed well with legislators in the Pacific Northwest. I would go to the various state capitals at least once a year and speak to the various caucuses in both the House and the Senate, because most of their state legislatures are bicameral. They have two bodies. And that would be Washington State, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, and Alaska. And, you know, in most cases, the legislators said, yeah, you're right. Let's not give him the win. And that was kind of a counter argument, especially in a place like Montana, where they did have protectionist tendencies around forestry and agriculture. And I think that got their attention. So now fast forward, and you have an administration now in the United States that's talking about deliberately, intentionally disrupting that close economic relationship, not as collateral damage to trying to increase security like what happened after 2001, but deliberately trying to disrupt that. And it's just something I don't think any of us would have contemplated on either side of the border in 2001, 2, and 3, when we were trying to find ways to increase security, but not adversely impact what we call the legitimate flow of trade and travel. In other words, you know, safe and secure, non-threatening trade and travel. So yeah, it's just amazing how it's an upside down world. And in our discussion just before we went online, you mentioned China and Russia to me, and it gave me a thought, which is, you know, today, you know, Osama bin Laden's not around, but China and Russia are watching this, and I would suggest North Korea also. They must be absolutely delighted at the prospect of the United States antagonizing its closest allies and, you know, almost deliberately trying to lessen its relations with its closest strategic and military and economic allies. That it would be an outcome that Russia and China and North Korea could only have prayed for.
And you can add Iran to that list as well, adversaries of the West. I mean, Canada and the U.S. do trade with China. A lot goes back and forth, but of course, there's a lot that cannot go back and forth because of trade sanctions, because of strategic military reasons. You know, China, of course, is a burgeoning military power. It's got its design set on invading and annexing Taiwan. And of course, there's legitimate concerns about espionage in the West, about foreign interference in the West, about concerns of intellectual property theft. Talking trade diversification, if the United States does do what Trump says it will, Canada is going to have to look over across the Asia Pacific at other customers. There are democracies Canada can trade with much more, such as South Korea, Japan, Taiwan, for instance.
Yeah, and we should always be looking to expand and diversify, but we've frankly been talking about that now for several decades, and we've done a lot of it, but our focus has waxed and waned on that front. You know, in one election cycle, it's in vogue to say we're going to expand our trade offices, only to see, you know, the next election cycle, oh, that's a waste of money, we shouldn't have trade offices of our own overseas. That pendulum moves back and forth as the political and public attention on the matter, you know, wanes, which is frustrating. The reality is, however, that the U.S. is our closest potential market. And there was an old saying I remember in my business economics courses at Simon Fraser, that most of the time your closest customer is your best customer. And don't lose sight of that. Yes. You know, be open to pursuing new markets further away. But just bear in mind, it's your closest customer. It's probably going to be your most reliable. And that's been the case. However, we now seem to have an unreliable partner in the White House. And exactly what his end game is a little bit hard to decipher. In fact, I would suggest maybe he's not even sure at the end of the day. But in the meantime, there's just tremendous uncertainty which in itself is counterproductive and will have a chilling effect, I think, on investment. And that means a chilling effect ultimately on job creation on both sides of the border.
Now, if Trump does go ahead February 1st with the tariffs against Canada and Mexico, we've heard a lot of talk about plans for retaliation by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, by various premiers, especially Ontario Premier Doug Ford, who's heading into an election, as well as DVDB, who's coming out of an election, still early in his term. We've heard phrases like everything's on the table, and we've heard phrases like dollar for dollar. Is that feasible to consider everything and to consider dollar for dollar? You know, here we are, Canada still is a much smaller economy, still has a lot of things the Americans need. We got a lot of lumber that the Americans are going to need, especially in Los Angeles, to rebuild after the wildfires. But is it feasible to be talking dollar for dollar and everything on the table?
I think it makes sense to consider everything carefully before making any decisions. But I think once you do consider everything, you will, you know, the planners, the advisors, and hopefully the senior politicians ultimately making the decision will come to the realization that not everything should be deployed, because some of it could backfire on us quite badly and make the situation worse. You know, it's just sad that we're even having this conversation for the reasons we talked about right at the beginning. Like, this would be totally self-inflicted harm, and just manna from heaven for countries in the world that would like to see Western democracies suffer and weaken, including the U.S. influence weaken. But really, that is the course, the logical outcome in my mind, if the utterances are to be believed as actual policy down the road, that the U.S. influence, instead of being enhanced globally, will actually be weakened if the U.S. pursues a policy of antagonizing and punishing its trading partners and its allies. That's not a road to greater influence. It's just the opposite. So it's a bizarre potential outcome, and one that I truly hope is not going to happen.
BC is a major supplier of energy and minerals. BC has quite a hydroelectric dam network. Unfortunately, because of droughts in the last few years, BC has had to buy electricity from the U.S., from jurisdictions that have natural gas-fired and coal-fired power plants. About 20% of BC's electricity in the last couple of years has been from the U.S., imported electricity. How could that be affected by the trade war?
You know, that electrical trading arrangement has benefited both sides. Even when we're importing, we're benefiting, even though we're spending money. It cost BC Hydro $1.4 billion net in the last fiscal year, ending March 31st, 2024. But we benefited by that because that allowed BC Hydro to save water behind their dams as we were importing and keep that water in reserve to make sure we could make it through winter peaks or extremely hot weather in the summer when electricity demand spikes. So, and the reverse is true. You know, California, when they had their serious electricity problems, and they're not ever completely out of the woods, but when it was at its most extreme in 1999, 2000, although they spent a lot of money importing electricity, it was worth it for them, or they wouldn't have done it, and to help stabilize their system. So it's been so mutually beneficial. Again, the idea of deliberately disrupting that arrangement is really the definition of crazy. And so I'm certainly hoping it doesn't come to that. But I just think British Columbians need to just realize that it is a two-way street. And it's at the moment, it's a street that's been benefiting us in terms of being able to import electrons because we have not had enough of our own. And I've had other people ask me, well, what would happen if we just said, well, forget it, we don't need that U.S. electricity, or if the U.S. turns off its tap of electrons to us, what would have happened in the last 2 years? Well, what would have happened? If we hadn't imported 20% of our electricity in the last 2 years, our reservoirs would have had to have been pulled down to dangerously low levels, and we might have had to embark on a crash course of severe electricity restrictions and efficiency measures. Imagine trying to reduce our electricity consumption by 20%. I think back to my time as environment minister, we would have, there was this thing called in the every spring, Earth Hour would come along. I think it's in April. And it's kind of fallen out of fashion now. But at that time, there would be marketing campaigns, ads by BC Hydro, lots of media coverage, encouraging people during a particular, I think it was a Saturday on a weekend, to turn your lights off for 1 hour and turn off your other electrical appliances to see how much we could move the system down. And at best, we saw a 1.5% reduction in consumption. I remember the media made a lot of the fact that in Alberta, they had a bigger reduction than we did. And the question was, does that mean Albertans are more environmentally sensitive than British Columbians? That was the question the media would put to me as environment minister. But anyway, through all that communication and talk and good intentions, we barely moved the needle. Can you imagine trying to reduce it by 20% in short order, our consumption? It would have a big impact on our economy and our way of living. So I think we obviously take electricity for granted, which is a sign of success. We haven't usually had to worry about it, but other parts of the world do have to worry about it, and it has a very negative consequence when you don't have reliable electricity. Your economies don't function, your industry can't function properly, never mind your hospitals and schools. So anyway, it just behooves all of us to think realistically that at the moment we're not in a position to tell the Americans to go fly a kite when it comes to electricity, because we are dependent on them at the moment. And we'll probably will be for some time. The snowpack this winter is not looking very encouraging. It's been a very dry January. A typical January is when we would accumulate more than half of our winter snowpack in the 1 month of January. It's typically the snowiest month for mountain snow accumulation, which is important for feeding our reservoirs later in the year. And this year, the snow is not showing up when it needs to, which is in January. So all that being said, you know, that maybe things could change. Weather is unpredictable, but it just means we need to be cautious.
And people in Metro Vancouver also take for granted building materials, take for granted what's in our computers, for instance. You know, the products of the small mining towns, small forestry towns in the interior, in the far north of the province, those could be hit very hard by tariffs. And that could mean a real challenge to the livelihoods of hundreds of thousands of British Columbians, you know, far outside of Vancouver.
You know, unfortunately, our fiscal strength isn't as great as it once was in terms of helping, being able to provide some temporary bridge financing, perhaps, for industries and businesses that could be negatively impacted. Our fiscal situation has been deteriorating for some time now. And even before this, we're now into a $9.3 or more billion dollar deficit in 1 year. So we don't have quite as much room on the credit card. If it comes to that, to trying to provide some financial relief directly from the provincial government to businesses to get through or to communities. But that might be what we have to do, is extend our line of credit to get through this. And even that won't be a perfect fix, obviously. I didn't agree with everything Brian Mulroney used to do as prime minister, but I certainly agreed with his comment that the best social policy is a job. Because of all of the benefits that come from that, from not just income, but sense of purpose, mental well-being, and sense of community. So if that gets disrupted in a serious way, even government funding can't make up for it.
And finally, you were in government here in British Columbia with the BC Liberal government under Premier Gordon Campbell in the early 2000s, in the years before the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics. In about a year and a half, Vancouver and Toronto, as well as Seattle, are going to be some of the host cities for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Most of the matches are going to be in the United States, but Canada and Mexico combined about 25% of the schedule. This is a time when the three governments really should be working together to organize this event. This is going to be the biggest single sport event in history. It's going to be bigger than any World Cup. It's going to be spread out over a great geographic area, Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. Should Canada and Mexico even think twice about hosting if the United States wants to spoil the relationship between these countries?
I suspect the state to provincial relationship will hopefully remain strong. Keep in mind, not everybody, especially in Washington State, voted for Donald Trump. And probably if they knew the extent of angst it's causing here in Canada, would be quite concerned. I'm not sure our American cousins yet know just how much of an impact already the bombast coming from the Oval Office has had here. But they will get to know it because we're in regular contact. Just there's so many connections back and forth across the border. And inevitably, they will learn about how we're feeling. And I'm sure most of them will be aghast at some of that rhetoric. So it's my hope and my expectation that planning will continue at the state to province level. It is not helpful having this kind of distraction at the federal level in the U.S., but I'm hoping that for FIFA, things are so far down the road now, it would be pretty disruptive to make significant changes in terms of venues. The planning's pretty far evolved at this point. But anyway, all that to be said, there is a lot of goodwill directly between our provinces and our regions, and that's one of the functions of PENWAR. It really has been. It's been my mantra when people in my caucus and cabinet would say, well, why? Because when I became a minister, I still stayed involved with PENWAR. Typically, when people got appointed to cabinet, you're expected to drop your other involvements because your cabinet role was considered to be the most important thing, to the exclusion of all other things, practically, including family and your constituency. And I always objected to that view and insisted on continuing to be involved with PENWAR because I thought it was so important that we build relationships with our U.S. counterparts before we have a crisis, before we have a problem. Because in the middle of a crisis is not the best time to try and build trust and confidence in each other. You need to do that before, so that when the problem does hit the fan and you pick up the phone, the person on the other end already knows who they're dealing with and feels they can talk candidly with you with some confidence. So that's been one of the reasons I try to stay involved with PENWAR, because I believe in the mission of trying to, despite this rather arbitrary line on the map at the 49th border, I know it's there for a reason, but exactly why it's drawn in that one space is a bit, or that one place is a bit arbitrary. That despite that, we need to find ways to work together and not let that border get in the way of, as we say, legitimate trade and travel and human connections. Because again, that would be such a travesty to lose that that connection that we've had that has benefited all of us for so long.
Thank you again for joining me on the podcast. My guest, Barry Penner, the chair of the Energy Futures Institute, a project of ResourceWorks. He's a former four-term BC Liberal MLA, held multiple cabinet portfolios during that time in office, and was also president of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, and still remains involved as a member of the Finance and Audit Committee.
Thank you. Great to be with you, Bob.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In Taiwan news, 10 Taiwan Lunar New Year's Day taboos to eschew. Do not cut hair, wash clothes, collect debts, sleep late, or curse. Do not use sharp objects, get angry, or turn off all the lights. Do not break anything, and do not leave odd amounts in red envelopes. The year of the wood snake begins January 29th. In ABC News Australia, it has been 5 years since COVID-19 hit Australia. These numbers show its impact. 12.1 million reported cases, more than 29,000 deaths, 72.6 million vaccine doses administered, Australia's borders were closed for 2 years, and 36% of Australians are still working from home. In the LA Daily News, Stay out of the water due to ash, toxins from fires, LA County health officials warn. Avoid swimming, surfing, and playing in the ocean, they say, due to arsenic and other metals and asbestos. The advisory applies to ocean and bay waters from Surfrider Beach to Dockweiler State Beach at World Way. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In Willamette Week, parents allege school officials donated air purifiers to Los Angeles before completing Portland's fixes. Portland's poor indoor air quality became a hot topic during the pandemic. Ultimately, the Oregon Health Authority donated 3,500 air purifiers in May 2023 to the school district. The district is sending 2,000 of the purifiers to LA after the fires and says it has 600 in storage. In Crosscut, the rise of Blue Sky, a not-so-Seattle-based social media company. Since November, over 10 million users have flocked to the site, which aims to provide a personalized feed not driven by an algorithm, in contrast to X, formerly Twitter. Blue Sky is incorporated in Delaware and says it is a remote and decentralized company. Blue Sky CEO Jay Graber is a Seattle resident, and her Blue Sky profile picture was taken along the city's waterfront. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for stories behind these headlines. FIFA shut out of Vancouver's Memorial South Park, and BC judge orders extradition of Iranian airline employee to U.S. to face fraud charges. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the people behind the Vancouver Holocaust Education Center. January 27th is International Holocaust Remembrance Day, the 80th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Find the Vancouver Holocaust Education Center online at vhec.org or go visit at the Jewish Community Center at 41st and Oak. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 26th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 26th of January in 1998, Bill Clinton said he did not have sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky? Of course, that wasn't true. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Go visit me there too. And sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News as news happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.